From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, New York has an on-time budget for the third straight year. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts about the budget process and transparency. And two environmental groups get a seat at the table monitoring construction of the Tappan Zee Bridge. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The New York State Legislature finished voting on a $141.3 billion state budget this week, with the State Assembly completing its work shortly before midnight on Thursday. The final passage occurred 1 week past lawmakers' self-imposed deadline, but 3 days before the spending plan was due to be finished. Our Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
The budget includes a tax and revenue package that also phases in an increase of the state's minimum wage to $9 an hour in 3 years. The tax cuts and increases include $300 million in small business tax cuts and a $350 rebate check to New York families with children under the age of 17. The rebate checks will total $1.2 billion over the next 3 years. A tax on millionaires and a surcharge on electric utilities will be extended. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says it's a budget that he can be proud of.
Certainly our minimum wage proposal, you know, the $9 number, which we'll get to in here, is a very significant victory for our members. It's not as pure as we wanted it, but in 2 years it will be at $9, next year $8.75. So I think we're, pretty good.
Republicans, who hold about one-third of the seats in the Assembly, pointed out what they see as flaws in the tax package. Assemblyman Bob Oaks of Central and Western New York, speaking on the Assembly floor, says the budget picks winners and losers.
We select certain people to receive a $350 child credit, but we ignore the young, struggling, childless married couple saving to buy their first home and waiting to have their first child. And it seems we also forget seniors on fixed income who are finding it difficult to make ends meet.
Opponents of hundreds of millions of dollars in funding cuts to services for the developmentally disabled say it's disabled people who are among those who lost out in the budget. Governor Cuomo initially proposed cutting $120 million to not-for-profit service providers after the federal government determined that New York had been overbilling for state-run developmentally disabled centers. Cuomo and legislative leaders ultimately agreed to restore $30 million, or around one-fourth of the cuts. Assembly members from both parties with disabled children and relatives vowed to fight on for full restoration. Assemblyman Harvey Wiesenberg, a Long Island Democrat who has a disabled son, called out Governor Andrew Cuomo, who negotiated the budget with the legislature, and recounted how the governor's mother had been an advocate for the developmentally disabled.
I don't know anybody who's an elected official with a heart that would do this. We cannot let dollars be more important than people.
Assemblyman Michael Kearns, also a Democrat from the Buffalo area, has a brother who is developmentally disabled. He recounted how then-Governor Nelson Rockefeller visited his brother and others at the center where he lived and even went swimming with the children. Assemblyman Kearns says the money is there in the budget to pay for the programs. It's just that it's been used for other things, like the $350 rebate checks.
Every person in the state of New York, take that $350 and sign it over to a not-for-profit. I don't need that $350. I don't want that $350.
The budget sets up a task force to try to use the $30 million in restorations as well as other federal Medicaid monies to try to mitigate some of the effects of the reductions. Governor Cuomo, who has argued that more money to the service providers is not always the answer, says he believes the cuts can be made up by cutting salaries of administrators at the not-for-profits as well as other unnecessary expenses.
Many of these overheads, I'm telling you, can be reduced. Many of the salaries are exorbitant. The corporate expenses are exorbitant, and that's where we believe the reduction should be born.
Assembly Republicans offered an amendment to restore the money, but even some of the Democrats decrying the cuts did not vote for it, saying it had no chance of passage. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, New York State has a budget, and it's on time. That's the third year in a row that it's had on-time budgets. And now we look at, well, how the process worked. Thomas Libous was out suggesting that the overnight Senate session that took place earlier this week was perfectly transparent. They were letting the bills age for 3 days, which would give people plenty of time to look at them.
Sure. And anybody could have turned on, you know, the equivalent of C-SPAN, the legislative channel, and watched them. Look, this whole thing is ridiculous. The fact of the matter is they're back to their old tricks. They're passing the budget in the middle of the night. They're treating these people like sheep. They go, bah, bah, bah. You know, they say, hold up your hand. Everybody holds up their hand. Most of the people who are voting on them haven't even read the budget. And yet, I keep thinking about this. Look, I've been a professor for over 40 years. If I don't come to class, and I say, okay, but I came most of the time, but I didn't come a lot of the time. There's people going to pat me on the back and say, good, you finally came, that's good. No, so for 3 years, they've done their jobs. Well, yes, that's why we elect them. The most important and really the only important bill of the year, the major bill of the year, is the budget bill. And now they want credit. They want a raise for having passed the budget bill for 3 years in a row. Well, hooray for everybody. But it is really disgusting. The idea that we are giving them credit for doing their jobs is more than I can just about have. As you can see, I'm filled with apoplexy.
Well, you've often talked about the fact that not only do most New Yorkers not have a clue as to what's in the budget, but the legislators themselves don't know.
My point exactly, exactly. You know, I would love to give them a pop quiz on what's in their own budget that they're holding up their hands or their paws during the passage of this bill. What they do, of course, is they look for whether or not their own pet projects are in there. And if they are, then they're happy. But if you think they read, do the people's business and read the whole thing all the way through, or if they have any control, because as we know, it used to be three people in a room. I'm going to tell you now, it's really one man in a room now. It's Governor Cuomo, because he has so much control over those Republicans in the Senate that if they don't give him what he wants, they're done. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I've told you before, the Republicans in the New York State Senate are done. No two ways about it, because the state is going bluer and bluer. But right now, Cuomo wants the Republicans in office because he thinks that the Democrats in the state Senate are irresponsible and will spend us to hell and back, and wants to make sure that that doesn't happen. So by a number of different devices, which I've talked about many times, he has kept the Republicans in power. But of course, he has a little bit of a problem. He wants to run for president. And when he's at that convention, somebody's running around and saying, hey, Mr. Democrat, who wants to be the Democratic president, you kept the Republicans in power in the New York State Senate in New York. Why should you be our candidate? So now he's turned and he's becoming much more liberal. The fact that he's got those breakaway Democrats who are also liberal with him as co-leaders with the Republicans in the Senate gives him everything he wants. It's positive genius, I'll tell you that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York has reached an agreement with two Hudson Valley environmental groups on a Department of Environmental Conservation permit needed for constructing the replacement Tappan Zee Bridge. The agreement also gives the groups a seat at the table in monitoring the construction. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The environmental permit is one of the last certifications the state needs to move forward with construction, and those involved with the project say it's critical. Brian Conybeare is special advisor to Governor Andrew Cuomo for the new New York Bridge project.
This is another major step forward for the new Tappan Zee Bridge. This is the most comprehensive environmental protection agreement that we thought possible. It includes protections not only for the river itself and aquatic life, but also it includes some improvements along the riverfront in local communities.
Two environmental groups, Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson, had written to the state DEC during a recent comment period on a revised draft environmental permit, saying the terms of the permit were too vague and not strong enough to minimize construction impacts on the Hudson River. They also took issue with a previously proposed $8 million in mitigation funding they said was too little. Now, both groups say they are pleased with the overall agreement. Here's Hudson River Program Director and Attorney for Ossining-based Riverkeeper, Philip Musigas.
You know, we look at the whole agreement, the permit, the mitigation funding, and the public oversight role kind of as a package, and I think as a package, we're happy with the outcome.
He notes that some of the agreed-upon restoration projects in the river include restoring oyster reefs, fish-spawning habitats, and tidal wetlands. The DEC permit includes $11.5 million of mitigation and restoration funding to protect the Hudson River and minimize environmental impacts from construction. $1.5 million of this is for waterfront-related improvements, such as restoring natural shorelines or acquiring land for parks in the communities affected by bridge construction. Again, here's Riverkeeper's Musigas.
Our primary goal has always been to strengthen the permit terms to make sure there are clear requirements for protecting the river during construction, you know, from dredging impacts, from stirring up contaminated sediment, from pile driving in the river to put the bridge foundations in. You know, that has an effect on fish that are in the vicinity of the construction. So, you know, our goal with our comments and with our negotiations was to make the permit terms clearer and stronger and more, stricter and more enforceable, publicly enforceable by Riverkeeper. And so I think we've accomplished that. We're pleased with the terms of the permit.
Steve Rosenberg is Senior Vice President of Poughkeepsie-based Scenic Hudson.
It was critical for Scenic Hudson and Riverkeeper to be engaged in this conversation. The project, if people think back 6 or 9 months ago, was moving ahead with very rapid speed, and I think there was a concern while people appreciated the need for the new bridge to be advanced quickly, there was also concern that important issues having to do with the environment and community impacts may not get a full review. By virtue of our intense discussions over a number of months with state officials, we believe we've achieved a much stronger outcome for the environment and the neighboring communities.
As part of the agreement, the state will hold regular meetings and site visits with Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson during mitigation planning and construction of the replacement bridge that will connect Westchester and Rockland counties. Here's the bridge project's Conybeare.
Well, they have become partners. We have been working with these environmental groups to protect the river during the project. They now do have a seat at the table to help as we move forward and monitor all of these protections that have been worked into the agreement and into the permit.
He says the items contained in the agreement will not add to the cost of the new bridge.
The dollar amounts involved here were included in the original $3.9 billion overall construction estimate. So this is not going to add to the overall costs. We knew that there were going to be some environmental mitigation costs involved, and those numbers had been worked into those projections.
And he says the project is on schedule.
Pre-construction surveying work is going on in the river right now. There are a couple barges out there doing what are called test borings, and we anticipate full construction getting underway later this spring.
Governor Andrew Cuomo's office says the only approvals that remain are from the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Business and tourism interests in northern New York are praising an announcement by Transport Canada, the Canadian equivalent of the U.S. Department of Transportation, that says up to $47 million will be invested in infrastructure upgrades at the border crossing north of Plattsburgh. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The Champlain-Lacolle border crossing is the primary U.S.-Canadian crossing between New York and Quebec, with more than 1.1 million vehicles having passed through the crossing last year. It is also the fourth busiest commercial crossing along the entire U.S.-Canada border, with more than $20 billion in goods crossing in 2011. Since 2002, the U.S. has invested more than $170 million in new facilities and infrastructure improvements at the crossing. SUNY Plattsburgh Department of Economics and Finance Chair Colin Reed believes that the announcement that Canada will now improve the Lacolle facilities will aid the region's commercial and tourism industries.
There's so much trade bilaterally between Quebec and New York. I think this is a real recognition that this is one of the best investments Canada can make on its southern border. We already recognize that by investing substantially in our northern border with Quebec a number of years ago.
Colin Reed believes the $47 million may be one of the largest investments Canada has ever made to revamp a border.
Both countries have been making a lot of headway in pre-clearing trucks and vehicles so they can much more quickly get through the border between Montreal and Plattsburgh. And that's really made a big difference if you talk to some of the local logistics companies. It's much more streamlined, primarily because of electronic techniques. So I think this is just one more step towards making the border much more transparent for the free flow of trade between the two largest trading partners in the world.
The Canadian upgrades are also expected to be a boon for the tourism industry. The Adirondack Regional Tourism Council operates the first U.S. Welcome Center on the highway south of the border. Executive Director Ron Ofner says over 100,000 people a year stop at the center, and keeping people moving at the border is vital.
Anything that can expedite the flow of traffic across the border is ideal for tourism. And in particular, when you're looking at people who travel in groups via buses, anything that can be done to speed that up would be tremendous. I've heard stories sometimes that buses on either side of the border in the past have been held up for a couple hours or more trying to get everybody through the customs process. So if what they're doing on the Canadian side can complement what's been done on the U.S. side, it'd be a fantastic boom for tourism.
CDC Real Estate works extensively with Canadian clients. President Mark Berry says the Canadian investment will enhance the reputation of this crossing.
Every port of entry in the United States has a reputation. And if that reputation is bad, in other words, it goes through the trucking firms that it takes forever for a truck to cross the border, or the tourist destinations become aware of the fact that cars are lined up for several hours before they can cross, those kinds of discussions can ruin it for tourism and for business. And I think that the dream of having a port of excellence at the Champlain border crossing, first conceived by Gary Douglas with the Chamber, is now coming true. We have a fantastic facility on the U.S. side. We'll very shortly have a fantastic facility on the Canadian side. I think traffic flow that's both commercial and tourism related is going to improve, and our reputation will improve.
Transport Canada notes that the project is among those identified in what's called the Beyond the Border Action Plan, a joint effort with the U.S. and Canada to enhance both countries' security and economies.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Late last year, the Cuomo administration laid out its agenda to address New York's future energy requirements. In mid-2012, the New York Sun Initiative was launched to make solar power in the state more affordable. The Innovation Trail's Ashley Hassett takes a look now at what still needs to be done to make solar technology truly competitive.
Adam Rizzo and his crew are installing a set of solar panels on the roof of a church near Buffalo. It takes his company, Solar Liberty, about 3 days to finish the job, but it takes the consumer a bit longer than that to come out ahead of their initial investment in solar.
We like to talk about it in terms of payback instead of upfront cost because each homeowner is a little bit different. But right now we're seeing 4 to 5 year paybacks for our solar systems. And once that payback is met, then you have free electricity for the remainder of the system, which can be 35 plus years.
That long, relatively low maintenance life cycle for solar technology is one of its biggest selling points. But of course, upstate New York's known for its occasional gloomy day, so systems still need backup, either from battery storage or the grid. Adam's brother Nathan Rizzo says there's a good reason your solar panels go offline during blackouts.
If the power fails, the solar system turns off, so it's not sending power back onto the grid if there's ever linesmen working on it.
The solar uptake in New York has doubled photovoltaic or PV installations since 2011, but the technology still has its critics. For one thing, the carbon emissions solar technology generates in the manufacturing and transport stage. Nathan Rizzo says that footprint quickly dissipates, especially compared to fossil fuels.
Transporting it to the job site, manufacturing it, all of those CO2 emissions that are being created throughout that manufacturing process, it only takes 2 years to pay it back, and then it truly is a clean technology that's not harmful to the environment.
From a church roof to roughly 600 student apartments on the University at Buffalo campus. A year ago, UB flicked the switch on their $7 million solar strand on campus. Chief Sustainability Officer Ryan McPherson says students are now working with Professor Vladimir Mitten to make those solar panels more efficient.
So as you can imagine, the ones on the space station are incredibly efficient, but have a very, very high cost, right? And the ones that might operate a little plant on a dashboard in a car going back and forth are very cheap and inefficient.
In order to bolster progress in the solar sector, the Cuomo administration wants to continue the level of funding that its major solar initiative, NY Sun, receives for another decade. The plan is expected to attract more private sector investment for solar. NYSERDA President and CEO Frank Murray says a key factor in making solar more investor-friendly is improving the capacity for energy storage.
Smart grids will minimize the impacts of future natural disasters on consumers by helping to enable individual premises and microgrids, in effect, islanding themselves to provide power to pockets of consumers when central power plants or portions of the transmission and distribution system are inoperable.
New York's solar industry currently receives a range of subsidies through the state's power authority, NYSERDA, and the federal government. Richard Caperton is the managing director for the Energy Center for American Progress. He says solar energy still needs those incentives to level the playing field against heavily subsidized fossil fuels.
Since 1918, the oil and gas industries have gotten almost $500 billion in subsidies from the federal government. So the federal government has always provided some level of incentive for energy technologies. And solar energy is no different.
Caperton says solar power's increasing affordability is driving the growth in solar-related manufacturing, installation, and operations jobs across the country. Recently, the National Energy Renewable Lab put out a plan to help get the United States to 80% renewable energy by 2050. But to that, Caperton says it's going to take more than just solar.
You don't do that with just wind or with just solar or with just hydropower. You need all of them. Different parts of the country are going to use more or less of different technologies, but the country as a whole needs all of those technologies to provide our power.
In Buffalo, I'm Ashley Hassett for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1313. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.